Hello everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if like us you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host Josh.
And I'm your other host Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me.
As always, thank you for all the support so far on our podcast.
Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Murder, Mother and Me Podcast. Share with your friends and write us a review.
But only if it's a good one.
Right everyone, let's get on with this week's episode. So this week, I'm talking about a case that happened quite recently in 2021. And this case is a chilling tale of deception, desperation and murder. A story that stunned the community, tore a family apart, and revealed just how far someone will go to maintain a lie. This is the case of Chandler Holdersen. In July 2021, what began as a routine missing persons case quickly unravelled into something far more disturbing. As investigators dug deeper, they uncovered a web of deception that would shock the community and reveal the dark secrets Chandler Holdersen had been hiding. What really happened behind closed doors of the Holdersen home? Before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. On the surface, the Holdersen family looked like a model of Midwestern stability. They lived in Windsor, a quiet town just outside Madison, Wisconsin. The kind of place where families settle down to raise their children in peace. The neighbourhood was tight-knit, filled with manicured lawns, backyard barbecues, and friendly neighbours who looked out for each other. The Holdersens fit right in. They were seen as polite, dependable, and involved. Bart Holdersen was a successful accountant. He worked for a local insurance company and was described by friends and co-workers as meticulous, measured, and deeply committed to his family. He was the kind of man who kept detailed spreadsheets of household expenses and planned everything down to the last detail. He believed in structure, discipline and responsibility, values he tried to instill in his sons. Krista Holdersen, his wife, worked in human resources and had a reputation for kindness and generosity. She was known to bring baked goods to neighbours, volunteer with local charities and she was active in her church. Krista was nurturing but not naive. She adored her family and often bragged to friends about how close-knit they all were. Their two sons, Mitchell and Chandler, had very different paths. Mitchell, the older brother, was quiet and reserved but hardworking. He had moved out, held a steady job, and was known for being responsible and dependable. Chandler, 23, still lived at home. He was more outgoing than his brother, more talkative, and had a natural charm. He was often seen helping neighbours shovel snow in the winter or mow lawns in the summer. People found him likeable, even if a bit evasive when asked about his future. To his parents and friends, Chandler painted a picture of ambition and success. He told them he was enrolled at Madison College, studying renewable energy engineering, a modern, forward-thinking field. He claimed he was close to graduating, just wrapping up his final credits. He even said he was working remotely for American Family Insurance and had been offered a job with the Madison Police Department's IT team. To top it off, he spoke excitedly about a potential job with SpaceX in Florida, telling people he'd soon be moving south to start his dream career. Krista and Bart were incredibly proud. They would often beam when talking about Chandler's accomplishments. They told friends about his job interviews and school progress. They even shared plans for a family vacation to celebrate his upcoming graduation, something they had looked forward to for months. Family life seemed good. The Holdersens often ate dinner together. Chandler would joke around at the table showing funny videos or talking about his supposed workday. They made plans for the future. Bart and Krista spoke of retirement, downsizing their home, travelling. Chandler spoke of financial independence, moving out and building a new life. Everything looked like it was heading in the right direction. But as we so often find in true crime, appearances can be very deceiving. Behind the warm smiles and suburban normalcy was a young man living a lie so complex, so deeply rooted, that it would ultimately destroy the very people who loved him the most. Because none of it was real.
Ooh.
That was a cliffhanger, wasn't it?
Well, I kind of gathered that when you said, you know...
It was kind of in the word, the wordage of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was going towards that conclusion, wasn't it? So I'm guessing all these things that Chandler is doing, he's not actually doing then?
Well, in a nutshell, yes. Everything that he said is a lie so far.
It makes you wonder, though, doesn't it, why they do that, really?
And it makes you wonder how... I know it was saying, like, his mum, Krista, was not naive, but she had to be a little bit naive to not even get onto it a little bit. And his dad, Bart, to be honest.
But I think when you have someone with that kind of mindset, they can be so convincing. And if you've got no reason to doubt them, and they build it a foundation of lies, and obviously then they need to keep lying, it becomes more and more convincing. And I think they actually convince themselves, and that's why they're so convincing.
they end up kind of living the lie, don't they?
Yeah, it's like it's an actual thing.
Well, we'll get into it in a minute, but as you're about to find out, he would go to any length to maintain this lie, or these lies, as we'll find out. So it wasn't just like he was saying these things. He did a lot of things to try and convince people that what he was saying was true.
We've done a couple of cases, haven't we, where this comes into play. One of them was Brian Blackwell.
It's very Brian Blackwell-esque.
The other one was Luca Magnotta, because he was a bit like that as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. And it's like you said, I think in the end, they end up convincing themselves that what they're saying is real as well. And they kind of dig themselves such a deep hole that they can't get out of it.
They build a complete separate identity, don't they, from what they actually are.
And his family sounds quite normal, just like a typical American family.
And there's two brothers, isn't there? And the other one seems to be
normal.
Just typical, yeah. And then you've got this going on. And they were brought up the same way, so I wonder what it was that, you know, was in him that made...
I wonder if Chandler, seeing the success of his brother, had a part to play in it.
Possibly, yeah.
And thinking that maybe he could never be as successful as his brother, so he had to invent this whole life.
It sounds like he didn't even try, though. It sounds like he's just invented this life from the start.
And it's not like he's, you know, like a middle-aged man and he's kind of not got anything going for him. He's only 23, he's still a young man.
Yeah, so if he's got these ideas he's talking about, then why couldn't he have just done them or tried to do them?
In reality, Chandler Holderson had dropped out of college over a year prior. He was no longer enrolled at Madison College and hadn't earned enough credits to graduate. But instead of coming clean, he built an elaborate, intricate facade that required constant maintenance. He created multiple fake email accounts posing as academic advisors and school officials. He forged digital documents, including transcripts and enrollment confirmations. Chandler even went so far as to build entire email chains between himself and school representatives. These fake messages were convincing, complete with signature blocks, logos, and administrative language that fooled even his parents. He would forward these emails to his parents with summaries like, "Just a few more credits," or "They're working on my final graduation paperwork." Bart, a numbers guy, would press for dates and official contacts, but Chandler remained slippery, always moving the goalposts. But Chandler did not stop there. To reinforce the illusion of a thriving future, he invented conversations with job recruiters. He claimed to have a remote job with American Family Insurance, but in reality, he spent most of his days playing video games, watching YouTube, and browsing the internet. He had no income and was fully dependent on his parents for financial support. The SpaceX job offer, a complete fabrication. He used Photoshop to create fake offer letters and job descriptions. He claimed he needed new equipment for his remote work and convinced his parents to buy him a computer and even a desk chair.
So, can I just say, he's actually got a talent though, hasn't he?
Well,
to pull this off and do all this, he's definitely got some kind of intelligence.
He must be pretty handy on Photoshop, because it's not easy to do that and make it look real.
But to keep track of all these different fictitious people and email himself, he's created this whole web of a different life, hasn't he? And that takes a certain level of talent, doesn't it,
Well, it takes a certain level of intelligence in a weird way, I think, to be able to match all the dates and times and names and to follow a chain of conversation that is actually just you to you, but sounds like it's you to multiple people. Because that email chain that they're talking about from the university, it wasn't just him and one person. It was like a chain of multiple people with different names that he'd created different email addresses for and had these conversations, obviously, with himself.
It's like he's living the story though, isn't it? He's inside the story.
Completely.
And as I say, he's got to keep track of it all. These emails from staff at the university and prospective job offers and things like this. So in his head, he's keeping tabs on it all, isn't he? And going along, so...
And I guess he would have had to, especially for this SpaceX job offer thing, he would have had to research, like, what a salary is at SpaceX, where it's located, all that kind of stuff.
That's what I'm saying. He's putting a lot into it.
He's putting a lot of effort into it.
He's not unintelligent, is he? He's got to research all this to make it look viable. So,
and like you said, he seems quite intelligent. Why would he not just put that to use and actually do something with it?
It's the age-old question, isn't it? And I always go back to another case, which was Ted Bundy, which he did have the intelligence to actually have a career in law, but he didn't. He did something else, didn't he? Something far worse. But he could have actually had a successful career, so I'd never understand that. There's something just in somebody, I think.
In a weird way, it would probably took less brain cells to actually get a job and be successful than it would to do this lie.
Yeah, if he put all this effort into actually getting the job he wanted, he probably could have done it.
And like it said, his dad, Bart, was like very into numbers, and he kept track of all the family's finances and everything, so it wouldn't have been easy to fool him, because I would imagine he was quite meticulous at checking letters and reading them through and, you know, noticing if a logo was a little bit off or a signature. He strikes me as someone that would get onto that. So he's obviously done a fairly good job.
Well, I think you can do a good job, and then when there's no reason to suspect something initially anyway, you don't question it, do you? Why would they question that? It just sounds all legitimate, doesn't it?
And then came a new layer to the lie, one rooted in sympathy and misdirection. Chandler told his friends, family, and even his girlfriend Catherine that he had suffered a serious injury. He claimed he'd fallen down a set of stairs at home, hit his head, and developed a brain injury that caused memory problems and vision issues. He wore a neck brace around the house. He limped. He visited chiropractors and told people he was undergoing physical therapy. This fake injury became a convenient excuse. If he missed a meeting with a school counsellor or forgot important dates, it was the brain injury. If he repeated himself or contradicted earlier stories, it was the memory loss. It made people feel sorry for him, and it bought him some time.
So he's given himself an out there, hasn't he? A reason, if he did slip up, it's down to this or that or the other.
Well, I think it's like he's covering his own back, isn't he? Because it's only human nature that eventually you're going to slip up somewhere with the amount of lies that he's telling. It's not just one, it's multiple lies going on at the same time that involve so many different characters in a way.
And he's got a go-to reason for why he slipped up.
Yeah, and if he says the wrong name or he says something wrong or he gets a date wrong, he'd be like, oh, it's my head injury.
Quite
but
clever,
like
really.
To go as far as wearing a neck brace and stuff like that, it's a bit laughable, isn't it?
He's taking great pride in this, isn't it? It's his greatest achievement, isn't it? But as we said before, why not just put all of that effort into doing something actually real?
And you won't be surprised to hear that to keep the illusion going, he even forged emails from supposed doctors and physical therapists.
Did he make all his own names up and everything?
Every person that he got emails from, he'd made the name up. They weren't real people. That's why I'm saying multiple characters. From the university alone, I think there was about 5 different email threads that he had going with 5 different people.
So obviously he didn't use real names, because then somebody could have researched them. If I was making a doctor's name up, I'd call him Dr. Lego.
Why?
I don't know. It just popped into me.
Oh my God.
Dr. Lego. Sounds good though, doesn't it?
In reality, there was no documented head injury, no imaging scans, and no medical record to support his story. Yet Chandler used it as another wall in his growing fortress of lies. He even altered his behaviour to match the symptoms of the invented trauma. He avoided bright light, mumbled at times, squinted at screens, and took frequent naps. He claimed he was under doctor's orders not to drive or stare at devices for too long. For those around him, especially his mother Krista, it was painful to see. She doted on him. She worried deeply that her son had been physically and mentally impaired, that he had lost so much potential. She felt responsible, and her sympathy made her even less likely to question the rest of his story. At the same time, Chandler's parents were becoming increasingly concerned. Bart, being an accountant, was meticulous. He began pressing Chandler to schedule meetings with school administrators. Krista, though more trusting, began asking questions too. They wanted transparency, wanted to know why Chandler hadn't graduated yet, why they hadn't seen a diploma, and why his employment situation remained vague. Bart reportedly attempted to contact the school himself. He wanted to attend virtual meetings with advisors. Chandler deflected, making excuses. He said the school system was backlogged, that administrative mistakes were common, and even claimed he had privacy concerns about sharing information. He grew increasingly irritated and defensive, accusing his father of not trusting him.
But that's a red flag right there, isn't it? Surely after all of this, and he keeps stalling for meetings and things like that, then you would think, they would think by that point, there's something going on, something not quite right.
Well, I've listened to another podcast on this case, which is why I wanted to do it today, because I found it so interesting, just purely for the amount of lies that he told. There was a recorded conversation between Bart, his dad, and the university, and in the conversation, he's asking them, he's saying, right, my son Chandler is about to graduate, blah, 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 and they're saying, no, your son's not about to graduate because he doesn't even come to this university. And he's saying, no, he's got emails from, I don't know, Ben Henderson. And they're like, no, there's no one here called Ben Henderson. No one works here.
From Dr. Lego.
From Dr. Lego. Dr. Lego doesn't work here. So during this conversation, you can actually hear it in Bart's voice that everything's kind of making sense now. He's caught his son in the lie, basically, because every name that he's saying on these emails that Chandler showed him, he's getting the same answer. They don't work here. They've never worked here. So you can actually hear it in Bart's voice, which I think is quite sad.
Like that, a slow realisation.
A slow realisation that, oh my God, he's made this whole thing up.
Penny's finally dropped.
The penny dropped, yeah. And I think this is kind of a turning moment in this whole story. In late June 2021, Bart told Chandler they were going to visit Madison College in person. He was going to sit down with school officials and get some straight answers. It was a pivotal moment. The elaborate tower of lies that Chandler had built over 2 years was about to collapse. This wasn't just about being caught in a harmless lie. Chandler wasn't dealing with embarrassment, he was facing a total collapse of identity. His entire persona, carefully built over years, was about to disintegrate. The shame, the fear of disappointing his parents, and the loss of control over his narrative overwhelmed him. And there may have been more at stake. There's also speculation that Chandler may have forged tax documents related to his alleged remote job, and that Bart, with his accountant background, may have been uncovering financial discrepancies. Whether or not this was the final tipping point is unclear, but what is clear is this. The pressure was mounting, and Chandler knew his lies were on borrowed time. The tension in the house was rising. Chandler wasn't just facing a confrontation, he was staring down the possibility of complete exposure, of losing everything. And rather than admit the truth, rather than accept the consequences, Chandler began planning the unthinkable.
So we can see what's going to happen here.
I think it doesn't take a genius to figure out what he's going to do.
No, but what I don't understand about this at the moment is, I understand what he's thinking, but he's going to have no financial security or anything, is he?
No, and I think at this moment, would anyone in the right frame of mind or with a bit of maturity just say, I hold my hands up, I've made this entire thing up, and I'm really, really sorry. I understand if you want to disown me or whatever.
But you're not dealing with a normal person, are you, though? No. Like you said, it's a collapse of identity. It's the whole ego thing. You build that yourself.
And it's 2 years of work, essentially, for him. He's built these lies over a period of 2 years, which is not... It's not a short time, is it?
But surely he must have thought that at some point this was all going to come to light.
I don't think he did. I think he thought he could just keep these lies up.
How far was this going to go? He was going to eventually have to get a job, wasn't he? Or come up with the goods, so to speak.
I think he was happy to just keep forging documents, keep forging even pay slips, I would imagine he would have done from SpaceX and all this kind of stuff. But I don't really understand the end goal.
No, because if his parents then said, well, you've got your own income now, so... You know, you don't need ours. What would he have done then? Probably would have done the same thing I'm guessing he's going to do now.
He probably would have made excuses because that's what it sounds like he does. It sounds like when he kind of gets questioned or trapped in a corner, he'll blame it on something else.
But there's an end to everyone's excuses, isn't there, at some point? This kind of reminds me of the Casey Anthony case, which is where her daughter had gone missing and she fabricated this whole web of lies about where she worked. I think it was Disneyland in Florida. And she kept this pretense going for so long. In the end, the police went there with her. She walked through the park and didn't. She never worked there, but she did. I think she'd worked there at some point, but had left a long time ago. And she actually allowed the police officers to go to the park and walk with her. And it wasn't until they actually got there and they said, she doesn't work here, that she said, no, I don't work here. But she went through all of that and, you know, she was going to keep that going for as long as possible.
I think they probably just keep it going for as long as they think they'll get away with it. You know what I mean? And I think...
Hoping that's something, they can come up with something else to take them off the track.
Yeah, and
probably.
Obviously Chandler's doing the same thing and... I don't think he actually knew that his dad had spoke to the school at this point and kind of was onto his lies a little bit, and that's why he was saying, come on then, let's go to the school, we'll arrange a meeting and we'll sit down, because I think he wanted him to admit it, but he never did. It was July the 1st, 2021, a Thursday. Chandler told police that his parents had packed up for the 4th of July weekend. According to him, they left early that morning with a couple they were planning to visit at their cabin in Langlade County, about 3 hours north. That same day, Chandler texted his girlfriend, Catherine, and told her that his parents had left suddenly. He even mentioned that they were supposed to come back Sunday or Monday, but they were thinking about extending their trip. The message seemed strange. Bart and Krista weren't known for making spontaneous decisions, especially not without sharing those details with friends or family.
And also, he's got a girlfriend, and didn't she suspect anything?
As far as I'm aware, no. Not until now. I think around this time in the story, she starts getting a bit suspicious.
Well, yeah, that's been true of many other cases as well.
Days passed. The 4th of July came and went. Krista didn't text her sister, something she always did. Bart didn't return phone calls from co-workers. The couple seemed to vanish. Neighbours noticed their cars were still parked in the driveway. Chandler offered explanations. He said they must have been picked up by their friends, or maybe they left from the cabin with another couple. Or perhaps they were out of cell service, but these excuses quickly began to fall apart. On July the 7th, Chandler walked into the Dane County Sheriff's Office and reported his parents missing. So I just want to make a quick note here. This is 6 days after his parents have supposedly gone away for the July 4th weekend, and he's only just reporting them missing.
So a weekend is like 2 days, 3 days, isn't it? So you would think on the 4th day, at the very least, he would have reported them missing.
He was calm and collected. He told deputies that he'd last seen them leaving with unknown friends in a dark SUV. He said he didn't know their names. He didn't have phone numbers. His story lacked substance, and detectives noticed. Investigators began looking into the Holdersons' supposed trip. They found no record of travel, no cabin rental, no contact with friends or relatives. Krista hadn't posted anything on social media, odd for someone as active as she was. Most chilling of all, the couple's phones had stopped transmitting signals entirely by July the 1st, which is conveniently the day that they left. And just going back to Chandler's story, or at least the story that he told the police at the time, it was all just so vague and no substance, like I said. There was no real information in there that the police could do anything with. It was all very convenient that he didn't know.
Yeah, it's just a very generic description, wasn't it? Yeah. On a trip, sort of a car, a dark coloured car, no make or model or anything.
Nothing, some just people a dark never SUV. Seen, yeah.
Didn't have any names.
And my question would be, if you'd never seen these people before, how did you know they were your parents' friends? Because he kept referring to them as friends of his parents, but he said he had no idea who they were.
Well, I suppose you could say could have made an assumption that because they were going with them, he assumed they were friends. You know?
Well, I would also assume that they sound like quite a close-knit family. You know, as they were saying, they sit down and have dinner together every night.
So he would probably know his parents' friends.
And also, even if he didn't know the friends, I would imagine Bart and Crystal would have said, oh, we're going away this weekend with Josh and Olivia. You know what I mean? Like, they would have at least said names or something. So I think that is what struck the police as a bit strange, that he didn't know anything. And also, I think they actually owned the cabin that they said they were going to as well. So I don't think that part's weird, because I think, from what I believe, they quite often went and visited this cabin that they owned as a family.
It was a mistake, really, wasn't it, to say that they were going to the cabin as well, because although that would not appear unusual to anybody who knew them, it also gives the police a reference point of where to start searching and, you know, an exact location. So if they were to search there and they weren't there, or it was clear they hadn't been there, that is obviously a red flag, isn't it, to them with his story?
As far as I'm aware, the police did go to the cabin and conduct a little search and stuff, and it was quite clear to everyone that no one had been there for at least a couple of months or something. It hadn't been used, basically.
That's exactly what I mean. So it would have been better if he said they'd gone on some trip, but he wasn't sure where they'd gone, or they'd gone, you know, I don't know, on a cruise or something, I don't know, something.
Yeah, he shot himself in the foot there a bit, really, hasn't he? Oh, and also, when he said they went away for the July the 4th weekend, but they were potentially talking about extending their trip, but there was no real... It was again, very vague. Extended by how many days? He didn't
know
anything.
Yeah, but he was saying that, wasn't he, to just buy himself more time.
Detectives were suspicious. They searched the Holderson home. Inside, everything looked mostly normal, but something felt off. There was a faint smell of cleaning agents. Towels were missing. Surveillance footage from nearby homes showed no SUV arriving or leaving on July the 1st. No sign of a departure at all. And then came a break in the case. A property owner in rural Cottage Grove, just 20 minutes away, called the police. He had found human remains near the edge of his property. Legs. Severed. Wrapped in trash bags. A horrifying discovery. When investigators arrived, they found additional fragments. Human tissue, bone, partial remains, scorched as if someone had tried to burn them. Dental records confirmed the worst. The remains belonged to Bart Holderson. Suddenly, everything shifted. This wasn't a missing persons case anymore. It was a murder investigation. Chandler, the concerned son, was now the prime suspect. So from what I understand, once he'd made this initial missing persons report about his parents, he was actually going round to all the neighbours' houses, and there's footage of it on their Ring doorbell cam, asking, have you seen my parents? Does anyone know where they are? You know, the typical psychopath, basically.
Yeah, it reminds me of Chris Watts, that same... similar kind of
exactly
thing.
Yeah, he was just completely pretending that he had no clue what was going on,
because he was on camera, wasn't he, saying he couldn't wait for them to come home,
and he was saying, if anyone's got them, please release them.
Yeah, and he just murdered them like 8 hours before or something like that.
Well, I think now that obviously they've found fragments of human remains and they know it's Bart, it's not looking great for Krista, is it? And I think they now know that, based on Chandler's weird stories that he's been telling, something's going on. Once Bar Holderson's dismembered remains were discovered, the investigation intensified rapidly. Chandler, now the prime suspect, tried to maintain his innocence. But as investigators peeled back the layers, a disturbing timeline began to emerge. One that suggested meticulous planning and cold execution. The first major clue came from Chandler's digital footprint. For someone who claimed to be panicked and heartbroken over his parents' disappearance, Chandler had remarkably calm and methodical online activity. Just hours after Bart and Krista were last seen alive, Chandler conducted internet searches for things like how to get rid of a body, does bleach destroy DNA, and how to clean up blood. He also searched for things like dismemberment tools and how deep to bury a body. I mean, this was only 4 years ago. Are people really still that dumb?
Well, it sounds to me that he didn't actually plan to do it, that it was circumstances forced him into that situation, that it wasn't a long-term plan, but maybe just a recent sort of plan, so he's just done I think he's probably... Did he do that research after he killed them? That's what I'm saying.
Well, they're assuming that this is after it was... It said the searches were made shortly after the last time they were seen alive. So I can only assume that they were dead at this point. However...
I think things have come maybe to a head and then it's happened and he's had to deal with that situation.
But what I mean is, why are you typing stuff like that into the internet when you know people can find it?
Oh, of course, yeah. Even if he wipes it, probably they can still...
It's 2021. We're way advanced in technology. We know that if we type things into Google, people are going to find them eventually.
Well, what else is he going to do though? He's got no one to ask, has he? So he's going to have to research it somehow.
I've got an idea. Don't kill your fucking parents.
That's a good point.
But perhaps the most damning evidence came from Chandler's girlfriend, Catherine, and her mother, Dulcie. Chandler had visited their home on July the 5th, just days after his parents were presumed dead, and asked to use their pool. At first, nothing seemed odd. I mean, I don't know what's not odd about that, but anyway.
Knocked on the door. Can I use your pool, please?
Can you imagine if I knocked on Janet's door and said, can I just use your pool a second, Jan? It's just so weird. Even though I'm her son-in-law, I feel like she'd still be like, what now?
I think the weirdest thing about that is that Janice hasn't actually got a pool, so I think it would be very strange if you asked her that
question.
I'm
trying to bring it into a real life situation for us. But what Dulcie noticed afterward would prove crucial. Chandler had been acting nervously, pacing back and forth. Later, she discovered Chandler had used their family's recycling bin to dispose of some garbage bags. Police retrieved those bags, and inside were rags stained with blood, scissors, cleaning supplies, and shockingly, fragments of human remains.
So he didn't actually want to use the pool, he just did that to get into the recycling bin?
I can assume that's why he was there. But again, are you that dumb that you're putting stuff in a recycling bin? I don't understand. Someone that seems to have a relatively decent amount of intelligence, he's not being very intelligent.
It sounds like he was a bit panicked and it was just all on the fly, wasn't it? But I think, I thought you were going to say he went into the pool and he was washing the body parts or something, or you know, doing something like washing himself.
Well, he's gone round to his girlfriend's mum's house and said, can I use your pool a sec? He's obviously not gone in the pool, or maybe he did go in the pool.
Well, because obviously that gave him access to the recycling bins, but...
But would you not... Why has he put it in a bin? Again, it's somewhere that's so easily accessible by people that can be found.
And the worst thing is, somebody he knows that can be associated with him and linked back to him. So why didn't he just go to a stranger's bin or somewhere?
Or just a random bin on a street?
I'm sure there's loads of dumpsters and things he could have put it into.
And I'll give you two guesses who the DNA matched to in these garbage bags as well. It was Bart and Krista. But that wasn't all. Investigators uncovered surveillance footage that placed Chandler at various rural locations in the days following his parents' disappearance. In one video, his car is seen pulling into a wooded area near the Wisconsin River. The same area would later be searched and more human remains, including Krista's torso, were found, partially buried and severely burned.
I always think it's really bad, you know, it's one thing to kill your parents or, you know, a close family member, but to actually cut them up, I think, it's a different level of...
We've said this before in previous episodes, it's like that one step further, isn't it?
It's that self-preservation, but there must be a point where you can't actually do that to somebody that you've known for all of those years and brought you up, and
I think it would take a significant amount of you being able to detach yourself from these people that were once your parents. Obviously, they are still your parents, but they're not alive anymore. So you'd have to detach yourself and just see them as things to get rid of. That's going to help you in the future.
Because his plan was more important.
Well, like you said, self-preservation was more important. Keeping up this lie was more important than his parents' lives. And I think ultimately, without them out of the way, in his mind, it might have enabled them to keep going with these lies. Because they were the only people that had kind of got onto the fact that he was making these lies up.
I still don't understand where this plan was going. What was the ultimate goal of it, though?
I don't think anyone knows. And I don't think he particularly knew either. I think he was just rolling with it and he was just going with it. And I kind of agree with you that maybe it wasn't like a long thought out plan, but I do think he planned to get rid of them. I think once they started asking the questions that he wasn't comfortable with, I think he'd made that decision in his head that they had to go.
I think it started out because he obviously felt inferior in some way, and then he's seeing how good it's actually working and, you know, the respect he was getting from it, and then it just kind of built up like that gradually. And as you say, I don't think he knew where it was going himself.
Back at the Halderson home, a forensic analysis revealed even more. Luminol testing, which illuminates traces of blood even after cleaning, showed significant blood evidence around the fireplace, in the basement, and on a broken glass door. The family's fireplace, a decorative feature in the living room, had been used for something far more sinister, the incineration of human remains. Investigators also found tools in the basement, a handsaw, tarps, bleach, and a hatchet, all of which tested positive for traces of blood and DNA. Chandler had clearly tried to clean up after himself, but the forensic evidence was overwhelming.
And why does he keep it in the basement again?
The tools in the basement, but also, you're burning the bloody bodies in your own fireplace.
I know.
Go and build a fire in a forest or something.
I know, that's what I was thinking.
I can't understand.
But then he kept the evidence in the house.
I just can't understand the level of meticulous planning that his lies have took to maintain yet.
And then he drops the ball at the end.
Complete, but not even just a little bit. He's lost the plot. Mm. He's not even remotely tried to cover his tracks. Well, he has. He's tried to clean it up, but he's not done a very good job, has he? Even more chilling was what investigators found in Chandler's iPhone Notes app, a detailed checklist. It included tasks like burn, bleach clothes, and trash day. It read like a murder to-do list, cold, calculated, and methodical. And Chandler's behaviour during this time, bizarre. He told friends his parents were just up north, still travelling. He visited a car dealership and test drove a new vehicle. He even asked a neighbour to help him move a large, awkwardly shaped bag from the garage, something the neighbour would later describe as too heavy for one person and weirdly rigid. When questioned by detectives, Chandler spun lie after lie. He said Bart had left with Krista. He said Krista had texted him updates, but phone records showed those messages had originated from inside the Halderson home from devices Chandler had access to. The digital trail betrayed him. Which is ironic, really, isn't it? Because his digital trail so far has not betrayed him at all. It's, in fact, helped him with these lies.
Yeah, I think Chandler's not as bright as I thought he was. I mean, why on earth, if you've got a to-do list, a clean-up list or whatever on your phone, why would you not delete it? I mean, they could probably still have retrieved it, but,
why would you have it on your phone full stop?
Exactly. Put it on a piece of paper and then burn it, you idiot.
Or can you not remember? Can you not just remember to burn the body and cut the body? Like, do you need to write it down?
I don't want to be giving anyone any tips here, but...
As pressure mounted, Chandler grew more erratic. He faked seizures in jail, claimed he had memory loss, but investigators weren't fooled. Every new lie Chandler told only tightened the noose around his neck. The Halderson home, once a picture of suburban peace, had become a crime scene. A place of horror, hidden behind smiling family photos and neatly trimmed hedges.
He was hanging on to this lie to the end, wasn't he?
Even in jail, he was still faking seizures because of this head injury, in inverted commas.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's still going with it, isn't he? Give him 10 out of 10 for effort.
Yeah, but 10 out of 10 for effort in the wrong areas. Like, he put 10 out of 10 effort into the SpaceX job, the university. He did not put 10 out of 10 effort into trying to cover up his crime.
No, but I just mean in his actual,
persistence. Commitment to the cause.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, he's like a dog with a bone. He's not letting it go, is he?
The evidence against Chandler Halderson was mounting, and fast. On July the 8th, 2021, just a day after he reported his parents missing, Chandler was arrested, initially for providing false information to police, but it wouldn't stop there. So that says to me straight away that they were obviously suspicious of him pretty much from the get-go. This is one day after he's even said that his parents are missing, and they're already arresting him.
Yeah, but I think they always look at the closest family members, don't they? If they live together and everything, it's an obvious choice, isn't it?
As investigators piece together more of the puzzle, surveillance footage, digital footprints, physical evidence, the charges escalated. Within days, Chandler was charged with first-degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, hiding a corpse, and providing false information on a missing persons case. Prosecutors called it one of the most gruesome, calculated family murders in Wisconsin's history. The case garnered massive media attention. Reporters gathered outside the Dane County Courthouse. True crime forums lit up with theories and speculation. The question on everyone's mind was the same: why? Why would a young man with no known history of violence brutally murder the two people who loved him the most? The answer, prosecutors would argue, was simple: desperation. Chandler had built his life on a series of lies about school, work, and his future. And as that web began to unravel, he took deadly measures to prevent being exposed. The trial began in January 2022 and lasted just over 2 weeks. The courtroom was packed: friends, family, media. Krista's sister sat in the front row every day, clutching tissues, refusing to look at Chandler. The prosecution presented over 90 pieces of evidence and called more than 40 witnesses. They painted a chilling portrait. Chandler lured his father into the home under the pretense of needing help with a computer issue. He then shot Bart in the back, and when Krista returned home later that day, he killed her too. The motive? A confrontation about his lies. Bart had uncovered that Chandler was not actually attending college or working for the police department, and a family meeting was planned. Chandler knew the truth was coming out. The defense had little to offer. They questioned the chain of custody of certain evidence and argued that there wasn't enough direct forensic proof tying Chandler to the exact moment of the murder. But their case lacked weight. The circumstantial evidence was overwhelming. So, just to talk a little bit about what they think happened as well, he basically rang his dad and said, oh, can you come and help me with a computer issue? Like, I've got something wrong with my computer. So his dad's gone and he's been hiding somewhere and he shot him in the back and killed his dad. At this time, his mum, Krista, was at work. And he'd waited in the house all day with his dead dad, essentially now, for his mum to come home, knowing that when she got home, he was going to do the same to her. So that's, for me, that's when it goes beyond like a spur of the moment thing. Because you've got all that time in between, maybe killing Bart was, but you've got all that time then. I think it was a whole day that his mum was at work. He's hid in the house basically waiting for her.
It doesn't sound like it was a spur of the moment thing for either of them. I think if he had sort of got him there under the pretense of there's been a computer issue and his dad's trying to help him, he knew exactly what he was going to do.
I think there's just something about him waiting all day in the house with his dad dead, waiting to do the exact same to his mum. There's just something so unsettling about that.
Mm.
And also, now obviously it's came out that Bart had kind of unravelled some of the lies and he'd said, right, we're having a family meeting and we're going to discuss everything that's going on. And obviously Chandler thought, no, we're not, mate. This is going to end now.
Yeah, that was the only conclusion he could come to, wasn't it?
Because he'd rather do that than face the truth. Perhaps most compelling was the digital timeline built by law enforcement. Every moment was documented. When Chandler's phone pinged cell towers near the body disposal sites, when he Googled how to destroy DNA, when he stopped responding to texts from family members, it all led back to one inescapable conclusion. In one of the most emotional moments of the trial, Chandler's brother Mitchell testified. He spoke about the last time he saw his parents alive, June the 30th, 2021, and about how he never imagined his own brother could be capable of such a thing. His voice cracked as he described the disbelief, the betrayal, and the void left behind. Chandler himself showed little emotion throughout the proceedings. He rarely looked at the jury. He offered no testimony. He declined to speak in his own defense. When the prosecution played body cam footage of Chandler casually describing the trip up north, knowing what he had done, jurors reportedly shook their heads in disbelief. After deliberating for just over 2 hours, the jury returned a unanimous verdict, guilty on all counts. Chandler Halderson was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So I think Chandler's brother, Mitchell, I assume they would have looked into him at some point as well, but I think because he lived basically a whole different life, he was very independent, he lived elsewhere, probably in a different county, I think, as well, and Chandler lived at home with his mum and dad, so I think that's why they looked at Chandler so closely, so quickly.
Well, they probably checked out some of his weird lies as well, and, you know, his brother was probably holding down a job, and everything he said was true, and then, you know, as you say, Chandler lived, he was in such close proximity to them, it wouldn't be hard to see him as a suspect, would it, really?
No, and I think it says a lot about Chandler as a person to just, again, keep trying to maintain the lies, even when all this evidence is against you, and he never admitted to it. He still claims that he's innocent. So as of now, 2025, he is incarcerated at Dodge Correctional Institution, which is a maximum security prison in Wisconsin, so where he's actually from.
Doesn't even sound like a real thing, does it? What is it?
Dodge Correctional Institution? God, that's a mouthful, huh?
It sounds like something of a fairground.
And it's maximum security as well, which I think is, you know, for the worst of the worst, isn't it?
To be honest, at this point now, I don't think Chandler's bright enough to even possibly escape.
Yeah, not based on his internet searches. The Halderson home was eventually sold. Neighbours recalled the strange silence that followed the murders. The absence of Krista's warm greetings, the lack of Bart's quiet presence. Local residents struggled to make sense of the crime. Chandler had no criminal record, no history of violence. What could drive a seemingly normal young man to commit such an atrocity? Some experts suggest narcissism, delusions of grandeur, and a pathological fear of failure may have played roles. Others point to the intense pressure Chandler placed on himself to maintain a lie. Whatever the reason, the truth is clear. Chandler chose murder over honesty. The case of Chandler Halderson is one of the most haunting in recent memory, not because of who the victims were, but because of who the killer was. This was not a stranger, not a career criminal, but a son, a brother, a young man who let lies and fear become so powerful they consumed his humanity. As we reflect on this tragedy, we're reminded that evil doesn't always come with warning signs. Sometimes it hides in plain sight, behind a smile, a reassuring word, and a false success story.
So what do you think about that then? Why do you think he did it?
Well, I think it was probably a mix of everything that he just said. But I think the the overriding thing is definitely the lies that he built and all of that becoming unravelled.
I don't know the whole background, but it sounds to me like he put pressure on himself, really, from the very beginning. I mean, I don't know what the family dynamic was, but it was kind of like he thought he had to live up to something. And maybe that was totally misperceived, you know, maybe it wasn't really expected of him, but maybe just to try as best he could and do well. But he put that pressure on himself, and because of that, felt the need to have this elaborate story.
Yeah, I think once that first lie starts to unravel about the university stuff and the college course, I think it was just a downward spiral, wasn't it? And then obviously his dad starts to question him, and he didn't like that his dad was questioning him, and then here we are now.
It is very similar to Brian Blackwell, isn't it? In that
it's very similar, yeah.
You know, I think all his parents wanted him to do was to have a good education and try and be successful, but, you know, within his own limits. And he took it to a whole new level.
Well, and also I think for his mum and dad to think for 2 years that their son's in college, he's doing really well, he's getting jobs from SpaceX, like, they're probably really proud and thinking, oh, he's doing really well for himself. So then to find out all of a sudden that none of that was true, I can't even imagine what that must be like.
And I didn't think when once he'd started that he couldn't backtrack then, because the only way was up, really. So he just had to continue with it. Right, everyone, that's it for this week on Murder, Mother and Me.
Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you again next time.
And remember, if you can't do the time,
don't do the crime.